The psalm referred to above opends with these words, Tefillah l'Moshe ish ha'Elohim, a prayer of Moshe, the man of God. Commenting on the latter phrase, the Medrash asks, if man, why God? And if God, why man? And one of the answers which is given to its own question is the following. When he ascended on high, he was a man, flesh and blood, ascended to the presence of the Holy One, blessed be he who is all fire, and whose angelic messengers are fire. Moshe ascended to him and is called man, and when he descended, he is called God. 2 points are made here. One is that when Moshe Rabbeinu ascended on high, he is called man, and when he descended, he is called God. The other is that in relation to the angels, that he is given the name man. For though angels are called Esh, fire, the souls of mortals are called Ish, men. The superiority of neshamas, souls, over angels may be seen in the very word Ish, which comprises the word Esh and the letter Yud. Moreover, the added letter Yud is within the Esh, reflecting the superiority of Ish over Esh. Now to explain. The letter Yud signifies Chachma. This is a vast concept discussed at length in all the classical works on Kabbalah. Briefly, nevertheless, one's initial comprehension of any concept appears as a swift and brief revelation. We observe, for example, that in the case of someone toiling to resolve a problem encountered in his studies, the first intimation of a solution comes to him as a brief flash. This is why Chachma is known as Barak HaMavrik, a lightning flash, of the essence of the concept. The smallest of all the letters is Yud, but the writing of every letter must begin with it, for Yud is a point, Nekuda, and everything begins with a point. The fence, Geder, in other words, the defining characteristics of Chachma is Bittel, self-effacement. Indeed, the fence, siyag, in other words, the safeguard for wisdom, is silence, siyag l'chachma shtika. The fence of something is not the thing itself. For example, in the statement va'asu siyag l'Torah, make a fence around the Torah, we see that the fence and the Torah are distinct from each other, though the fence does have a connection with the Torah in that it safeguards it. The same applies in relation to chachma, where the fence, in other words, the vessel for Chachma, is Bittel. The essence of Bittel is hearing and accepting what another says. A wise man, Chacham, listens to everyone. He is a wise man who from every situation and from every man, whether great or small, can learn a little something. Every single aspect of my father's conduct had a basis in the Halacha or in Kabbalah. And any custom observed by his forebears, the Rebbes, which he had either seen himself or which he had heard of on a reliable authority, was regarded by him as a statute. Our sages tell us, Chayav Adam Leimar Belashen Rabbi, one is obligated to quote a statement in the very words of his teacher. With my father, this principle of faithful transmission applied not only to a custom, but even to every nuance of a niggun, how each melody was sung, and when it was sung. The singing of Nigunim plays a serious part in the way of life of Hasidim. Everyone knows, for example, the 10 Nigunim composed by the Alter Rebbe to be sung on particular occasions. My father taught us the great Nigun comprising 4 themes, and explained that they corresponded in ascending order to the 4 worlds, Atzilus, Bria, Yetzira, and Asiya. I have kept the Hanacha, which I recorded of this talk at the time. Some of these 10 Nigunim are quite short, single motifs which he would sing at certain times, and in Lubavitch, the great Nigun was sung only on special occasions. On Yotes Kislev, at the celebration of a circumcision, Bar Mitzvah or wedding, and on Rosh Chodesh Elul. My teacher, the Rashbatz, Reb Shmuel B'Tzalel, once told me something that he himself had heard from the mouth of the Tzemach Tzedek at the wedding of Reb Shneir Nachums, as follows. Our sages tell us, Ha'omer Shmuel B'Shem Omra Yira Baal Shmuel Kilo Emed Negdei. One who quotes a teaching in the name of another should regard the original speaker as if standing before him. When one repeats a Torah teaching, one unites himself, oneself with the Naharan, Nefesh, Ruach, Neshama of the one who taught it. When one sings a Nigin, which one has heard from him, one unites himself with his Chaya and Yechida. The Tzemach Tzedek then proceeded to sing the Alter Rebbe's celebrated Nigin with the earnest rapture of Dveikus. His sons sang with him, and all those present shed contrite tears of teshuva. My grandfather, the Rebbe Marash, used to sing certain nigunim to himself in the course of davening during Psukei Dezimra and the blessings of the reading of Shema, and while putting on the tefillin of Rabbeinu Tam, while he was putting on his Shabbos clothes and again after Shabbos as he took them off, and at the Shabbos table by evening and by day. Among my notes, there is a vart that I heard my father telling Rabbi Shmuel Doiv on the way home from Yalta in 5647, Tafresh Mem Zayin, 1887, that a nigin, a discourse of Chassidus, and Yechidus correspond respectively to thought, speech, and action. Now to clarify, it has been explained that the bond and union between Rebbe and Chassid subsists at various levels. When a chassid speaks with his rabbi at Yechidus, two forces are at play. Firstly, the word Yechidus means a state of being soul, as in the statement in the Mishnah, Amar Masha Amarta Li B'Yichud, say what you said to me when we were alone. Secondly, Yechidus implies clarity, as in another statement of the Medrash, V'yadu B'Yichud Kisham Ha'arin Nignaz, and they knew clearly, as defined by Rabbi Avadia Bar Tanuria, that the ark was hidden there. Yechidus then means not only the union of Chassid and Rebbe, which is a product of the bond of the Chassid to the Rebbe, and of the innate love which the Rebbe feels for the Chassid, but in addition it means clarity. The essential content of Yechidus is a union that gives rise to clarity in the mind of the Chassid as to what course of action he should take. For when a person first begins to tackle the subject of Avodah and draws up an account of his spiritual situation, his spirits wilt, and confusion sets in. He does not know what his first step should be towards tikkun, towards rehabilitating his spiritual condition methodically and effectively. It is this much-needed clarity that a chassid finds in Yechidus, through union with his Rebbe. When he tells his Rebbe of his inner spiritual condition, the Rebbe tells him how he should begin the labor of tikkun. The term maiseh, translated above as action, does not refer only to a piece of work such as making a vessel or writing or drawing. Instances of motor activity. Rather, maisa is a term that describes a function, the function or effect of every faculty of the soul. Whether we are speaking of the intellectual faculty of chachma, bina, and das, or the emotive attributes of love and awe, chesed and gevura, or the faculties of sight and hearing, thought and speech, is called maisa. This, then, is the explanation of the above vert, that a nigin, a discourse of Yechidus and of Chassidus and Yechidus correspond respectively to thought, speech, and action, maise. When a chassid brings the entire content of his Yechidus to realization, his bond with his Rebbe extends to the furthest level of maise. This subject warrants a deep-reaching explanation which will be forthcoming when the Almighty provides the opportunity. When a chassid repeats the chassidus he heard from the Rebbe, there is created a union on the level of speech, and through a nigin, there comes into being a union on the level of thought. It was the private custom of each of our forebears, the Rebbes, to deliver certain maimarim in the presence of their children. As has been mentioned before, Biurei Zayar the Siddur and certain maimarim in Pirush HaMilos are based on the maimarim which the Alter Rebbe delivered for the most part in the presence of his children alone. Likewise, the Alter Rebbe repeated for the Tzemach Tzedek alone the maimarim which he had first delivered either before the latter's birth or in his early childhood. So too, my great-grandfather the Tzemach Tzedek delivered certain maimarim to my grandfather, the Rebbe Marash, and my grandfather delivered a certain maimarim for my father, the Rebbe Rashab, as well as a number of expository maimarim explaining the discourse which he had delivered publicly. In preparation for my bar mitzvah, I had to memorize and master three maimarim, one short and two long. My father directed me to repeat one of the long ones on Monday of the week of Parshas Balak, which was the 12th of Tammuz, at the burial places of my grandfather and great grandfather, the Rebbe Marash and the Tzemach Tzedek, respectively. He told me to repeat the short one publicly at the festive table on the same day after prayers, and the third mimer at a certain time, which is recorded in my notes at that time. No one was to know of this third mimer. In those days, I saw this as a major trial, but this too I withstood, even though it entailed a major battle with myself. Indeed, my life in that period presented a number of such fresh challenges that seemed to demand more of a struggle than my childhood strength could muster. From the year Tafresh Nun Aleph, 1891, onward, a new world opened up before me, a world of notions that were somehow spiritual. It was at this time that my father began to teach me Chassidus, and that I began to feel somehow that there exist comprehensible concepts whose effect is that one should not desire the things which one spontaneously desires, and that one should desire the things which one does not spontaneously desire. There were three people at the time of whom I was particularly fond. The first and the one I loved most of all was my teacher, Reb Nissen. From the very first day that I started studying under him, I found him lovable. He captivated me with the whole heart of childhood innocence. By his clear explanations of the Gemara with its commentaries of Rashi and Tosfos, by the good-natured patience which he listened to my childish queries, by his fiery joy, by his explanations of the Haggadah, and by every move that reflected the refined character traits of a true chassid. Reb Nissen the Melamed was the first to open my eyes to perceive how in the realm of human conduct, good and evil are to be found jumbled together, and the first to explain to me how one ought to abhor evil and choose good. The second of the beloved people was Reb Chanoich Hendel Kurnitzer, and the third was Meir Mordechai Bartosover. I owe them a great deal for the influence they had on me in my early childhood years when I was 7 or 8 years old. After Pesach Tafresh Mem Zayin 1887, we were on our way home from Yalta, where my father had been from the middle of Elul Tafresh Mem Vav 1886, and spent about 3 weeks in Kharkov. There, for the first time in my life, I saw assembled in one place all the celebrated Hasidim of stature, such as Reb Chaim Ber Vilensky from Kremenchuk, Reb Dov Ber Zev Kosevenikov from Yekaterinoslav, who was known as the Radaz, Reb David Svi Chaim from Chernigov, the Radatz, Reb Yaakov Mordechai Bespalov from Poltava, the Rim, as well as a host of Rabbanim and well-to-do Hasidim. All of this made a strong impression on me, particularly the self-effacement and the respect shown by all these Horei Rabbanim and Chassidim in the presence of my father. Every move of every single one of them became deeply engraved in my young mind, especially the honor accorded my father by the Rav of Kharkov, Rabbi Cheskel Arlozorov, a scholar renowned in the rabbinic world, and by his brother Reb Eliezer, the well-known Rav of Ramin. In honor of Lag BaOmer, a festive meal was arranged, which was attended by all of the above-mentioned men of stature, and by so many Chassidim that the large room was packed. I clambered onto a chest of drawers that stood on the side, and witnessed the profound respect shown by all those present. I observed their happy faces as their warm hearts found expression in enthused melodies. Then suddenly they all fell silent, and my father began to expound Chassidus. Back in Lubavitch in time for Shavuos, I found myself strongly drawn to Reb Hendel. I began to make a special point of listening to whatever he said and watching him as he prayed. That Shavuos, I began to take an interest in the Chassidim who had made the journey to Lubavitch for Yom Tov. All around me I heard names, Reb Gershon Ber, Reb Shalom Reb Hillel, Reb Zarman Niemerk, Reb Avram Ber of Babroisk, Reb Shmuel Ber of Barasov, Reb Leil Padabranika, Reb Avram of Jebin. Then there was Reb Pinchas Leib. He had been my grandfather's Gabbai Sheni, an assistant of the Gabbai Rabbi Levi Yitzchak. Rabbi Pinchas Leib was a true chassid, a chassidish yid, and a really good friend. Nowadays, he spent most of his time in our house because he was busy copying various manuscripts, Maimarim, for my father. Almost my father's aide. He used to speak to me warmly, telling me stories about my grandfather and setting out the praiseworthy attributes of each of the above-mentioned elder Hasidim. That Shavuos was the first Yom Tov on which I was present for the whole time during which Hasidus was being expounded in the minyan that was held in the little hall, where my father used to deliver his Maimarim on Shavuos, unlike Shabbos when this would take place in his home. I understood nothing, but I observed everything closely. The proceedings interested me intensely. Since I had learned little during my almost three quarters of a year in Yalta, my studies had fallen behind the expectations for my age. A temporary private tutor was therefore hired for me, by the name of Rabbi Yitzchak Gershon, whose task was to prepare me in the few months remaining until the new term for admissions to the cheder of the advanced Gemara class. At this point, an extraordinary assiduity developed within me, and in those few months, I managed with God's help to attain the standard required for admissions to the class of an efficient teacher, Reb Shimshon the Melamed, under whom I studied for 3 years. As a teacher, he carried out his tasks well in all respects, but as a person, he was far from good-natured, so that through various circumstances, I was brought even closer to Reb Hendel Kornitzer and Reb Meir Mordechai Barasov. Whenever I had free time from cheder, I would sit down next to them to hear a story or a vart. Reb Hendel's davening, the way he read Tehillim, his admirable character, Reb Meir Mordechai settling down at certain times to study. He was a businessman who had time available only in the evenings, when he would take a seat in the little hall to study, in such a pleasant manner. All these left a mighty impact on me. I felt a special degree of attentiveness and respect towards them, and would find delight in serving Reb Hendel a cup of tea, or bringing a little something for Reb Meir Mordechai. Quite often, Reb Meir Mordechai would listen to my recitation of the Gemara that I had studied. When he saw that I had grasped a particular passage properly, he would afford me pleasure by teaching me the novel interpretations of one of the commentators. And Reb Hendel would often listen as I recited the Mishnayos that I had committed to memory. The greatest joy of all was listening to Reb Hendel telling of how he had grown up among elder Hasidim. In fact, he had even known Hasidim of the Alter Rebbe. From every story or custom that he recounted of the Hasidim of bygone years, he would derive a moral, a lesson in proper conduct. With him, the love of a fellow Jew was one of the key lessons. Whatever he said sprang from a heart inflamed by the enthusiasm of a Hasid and found expression in mild words which sank deep into the listener's heart.